Dear to the past.
Mike Beard. Found a compassionate home, so.
All right. We'll call the Conference Committee on Senate File 2935 to order. It actually works out that the first sections are the ones that are identical and that we don't really have much issues with, so maybe we should work on those first. Article 1, House Section 1, was passed last year in the Senate as Senate File 1369. It does require a technical amendment. The A3 amendment has been passed out to members. It would change the one percentage from 57 down to 48.5 and make it budget neutral. Representative Abler.
Yeah, I'll move that.
Moves the A3 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Then I think we could adopt House Section 1 and Senate Sections 1 through 14. Senate Sections 1 through 14 are identical with House Sections, except for two of them, 8 and 12, have technical differences that the staff prefers the Senate language on. So
I'll make that motion.
Representative Abler moves Senate Sections 1 through 14.
And House 1, 2, is that the?
It's actually House 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Oh, you don't want that.
12, 13, 14, 15, and 16. House 11 is in another.
No, you said, did you say House 1? That we were supposed to?
Yeah, House 1 and Senate 1 through 14.
My motion was both.
Yes. So Representative Abler moves House Section 1 and Senate Sections 1 through 14. And those are all identical now, except a couple of technical differences, and we got the version that the staff recommends. So on that motion, all those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. All right. And then we really have a couple of issues to discuss. There's House Sections 11, 17, and 18, which are some provisions that the Senate doesn't have a position on. The House added them. They're from the child caring industry. DHS has talked to me about these. They're neutral on them, but I guess we'd like to get a little bit of background. And I'm just going to give a scope of what we have left to do quick. House Sections 19, 20, and 21 are these consumer satisfaction provisions that I think Representative Abler was the originator of. House 22 is a transfer of real property of the old RTC. Representative Ward brought that to the Senate. Doesn't have any.
And we'll talk about that.
We'll talk about that. Probably take some testimony. House Section 23. I'm guessing is an Abler thing with the repealing of the chiropractor.
That's the technical
record stuff, technical stuff. DHS has talked to us. They're neutral on this one. And then we have Article 2 that I think we're all familiar with. It's traveling separately in both bodies as another bill. So maybe we'll jump in. What we have is House 11, 17, and 18, again, from the child caring industry. And DHS is neutral on this one, but maybe the House could describe to us where this originated and
this the Greiling piece? Yeah. Hey, Mr. Kerber could describe where this
Kerber, welcome to the committee.
Or
you
did you want to
just take a seat with us?
We have another witness here who could describe it.
Okay.
Hey, why don't you both come up? You have room there to bring two chairs up?
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Jerry Kerber. I'm the Director of the Licensing Division at DHS. And those sections, as referenced, were initiated by the child care center industry as an attempt to really come up with a different way to look at some unfortunate events that occur in child care centers so that in every case the department doesn't need to call them maltreatment and then disqualify people because of it. There have been some arguably reasonable alternatives come up, non-maltreatment mistake definitions in the Maltreatment of Minors Act, so we can recognize when something occurs, and if it meets those criteria in the statute, we can recognize it as a non-maltreatment mistake that was made. The other part of this is really pretty neat, too, that goes along with it, there's a provision in here that talks about risk reduction measures. And this kind of follows some language in the Vulnerable Adult Act that requires that licensed programs serving vulnerable adults do an assessment of their operation. You do an assessment of the environment in which you're located, an assessment of the population you're serving, any particular characteristics of them, and then also the building, so that you can figure out what is it here that makes these kids most likely to get into some kind of trouble, and do a very careful look. For instance, this room, looking around this room, you might identify some characteristics that would want you to identify those, and then identify some procedures that you're going to implement to reduce the likelihood of kids being harmed. And so that's a big part of this too. That's quite exciting. So, but I'll turn it over to my colleague here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Valerie Dozeland, and I represent the Minnesota Child Care Association, which are the licensed child care centers. One thing to point out is that the provisions in this, in the House bill, only relate to centers. They don't relate to family child care. And one of the barriers that we had with the current law is, although there was an opportunity for an individual to get a set-aside from the commissioner, if that individual works in a center with a set-aside, they have to notify all current families as well as prospective families. And our centers were very reluctant to hire people with a set-aside because of that posting requirement, because it was just, it scares families, it scares parents when you hear you have someone working in the center with a, who maltreated a minor. And this really is our attempt to provide exception when there really is an accident, a genuine accident. Not someone's neglected or abused or beaten a child. It's those rare instances. And a couple of things to point out. If the non-maltreatment mistake determination is made that the individual is performing duties identified in the child care center's program plan as required by rule, they have not been determined responsible for a maltreatment mistake in the past, and they have not had, if this passes, would not have had a similar non-maltreatment mistake, and that they were, the center and the individual were following all rules and laws and statute, and that an individual can only be granted this non-maltreatment mistake once. It literally is a one opportunity to kind of be able to say, I made a mistake, it's not going to happen again.
Any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Moore.
Ms. Dozeland, what would the response be to somebody who's a small business who says, there they go again, making us do more things?
That's a very good question. Centers already have to have rules and our policies and procedures in place based on statute and law. We believe that this is just a more formalized process and allows for the information to be done in a more formalized and central manner. The association is committed in working with licensed child care centers across the state to help them implement this law as easily as possible. Similar statutes are in place for, if I remember correctly, foster child care and group homes and other licensed programs.
What percentage of the child care agencies are you representing? Is there any dissent among your membership, or is this?
We have about 200 members, and I don't remember the total. We have put this information out in the last 6 months. We've been working on this issue for a long time. And we have put this information out to our members regularly via updates and alerts, and we have not received any negative feedback. We also recently had a conference and discussed it at the conference and did not hear any concerns.
Mr. Kerber?
Mr. Chair, one of the things that we've been talking about is the need to really provide some training for child care centers before this becomes effective. And so one of the things that we're hoping to accomplish today, if this passes, is to get an amendment that makes it effective January 1st of 2011. I think one of the amendments says drafted has a 2010, January 1st of 2010, but we're actually hoping for the next January, so that we've had some initial discussions about how the department and the trade association can coordinate some training efforts and get the word out there and provide some education to centers about what does this mean and how is it really good for you.
Okay.
Is that the A6? Or is that Ms. Aves, is there?
I believe that would be the A9. I'm just checking the.
Yep.
So there's an A9 amendment?
It would be A9, and I believe Mr. Kerber is.
Yes, sir.
Yes, it was handed out.
Okay.
So when you, actually the A9, there's a couple of things to it, but how do you want to proceed with that?
Well, maybe describe the A9 then, I guess.
Okay. Mr. Chair, the A9 covers that effective date, but there's also some other amendments in there to this part, and there's a couple other pieces that amend House language based on feedback from the departments. So maybe...
I thought the effective date was going to be changed to 2011. That would be an oral amendment to the A9 amendment.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. An oral amendment to the amendment.
Okay.
Or a plain old oral amendment to the bill.
And Mr. Chair, if I could just add one thing. The language creating the non-maltreatment mistake is really a very huge step. One of the problems that the child care centers are having is very qualified, very caring teachers kind of get caught in this... in the problem with the Maltreatment of Minors Act, and they cannot be employed. So these teachers are losing their jobs for about 7 years, and it's making harder for it's challenging for the centers, for the children in the centers when they lose the teachers that they care about. Non-maltreatment determination goes a long way in kind of helping address our concerns with the Maltreatment of Minors Act.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the A9, and if I can incorporate on line 1.4, a change of 2010 to 2011. Is that right, Ms. Hayes?
Yes, it is, Representative Abel.
And so the amendment is the technical thing, is that I believe those are the Section 17, is that? Or is this the, none of this is the last stop.
No.
Consumer satisfaction stuff.
Right, and the other two, on page, so Ms. Hayes, pages 1 and 2 tied to what we were just talking about.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Senator Moir.
The first, Section 17 and Section 18 of the background studies on the guardians ad litem that were requested by DHS.
That's correct. Right. That's a different issue.
Yeah.
Should we talk about that?
It's a different issue than the non-maltreatment.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, that's so. Right. I'm through line 1.6, or excuse me, up through 1.4 is the issue we're talking about now on the amendment, on the A9 amendment, and beyond that is a different issue.
Oh, well, let's not take up brand new issues, a host of them.
Should we take the
A9?
Well,
should
I move this part of 1.4?
Well, I mean, I think we could just move an oral amendment to the bill, even. Somewhere in the bill is this January 10th.
I could move the first four lines of the amendment.
Well, I think we could just make an oral amendment to.
If you want to adopt Section 11 with an effective date of January 1st of 2011, you can.
Well, if we have a motion to pass, it would incorporate that change to the effective date.
Do you want me to move that now?
Well, House Sections 11, 17, and 18 all work together as my. Is there any other questions of members?
Mr. Chair, can we just at least put it on the record where the Senate companion is to this language?
Yeah, I was going to take note of that. We do have, I was just informed, a Senate bill, a Dahl bill that didn't come out of committee.
There's no formal Senate.
And so there is no Senate position on any of these. And I don't have any further information as to why it wasn't heard in our Health Policy Committee.
Mr. Chair, do you think perhaps Mr. Kerber or Ms. Dozlin might have some information for us?
Mr. Kerber, Ms. Dozlin, any?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, Valerie Dozlin with the Child Care Association. We had a different bill last session, which the provisions of that bill were included in the health and human, or the licensing bill. The governor had said he would veto that bill if those provisions were included. So they were very different than what we were doing now, but trying to get at our issue of having an employee work in a center with a set-aside. And Senator Dahl worked very hard to try to find a resolution to that issue. Over the course of the interim, we worked with DHS licensing to try to come up with this compromise and this language. And Senator Dahl did not want to move forward with anything until we received the affirmation from the governor's office or from DHS that this was language that they could either be neutral on or be supportive of. Because of the GAMC bill discussion, our effort to try to get a resolution didn't happen until the very last policy deadline. And so that's why the bill only moved forward in the House. Senator Dahl did introduce it, I believe, Thursday of the policy deadline.
And my recollection is that Senator Dahl did move a more expansive version getting at some of these same issues last year and actually did make it to the Senate floor, and we took a position on provisions that actually went further than this. So this is a compromise where we've ratcheted back on a Senate position. Would that be a good way to characterize what this is?
Mr. Chair, I think that's an accurate way to represent the outcome. What we're talking about here is it's kind of complicated because it involves the Maltreatment of Minors Act and what's going to be maltreatment. It talks about what the background study law, what disqualification material, and then it also gets into we don't amend it here, but it also gets into the issue of what has to be posted in a center and what has to be handed to parents in writing, current parents and prospective parents. Last year's effort, I think, in the House didn't go quite so directly to the parental notification as the ultimate bill, I think, that passed in the Senate, if I'm remembering right, on that notification requirement. All trying to get at the same thing, though, that there are unfortunate events that happen in child care centers that of a variety of levels of severity that all sort of get the same label under the Maltreatment of Minors Act. It could be something relatively minor, like a finger getting pinched in the door. That can result in a label of maltreatment all the way up through some pretty severe sexual abuse with penetration. They're both maltreatment. And so what this is doing is sort of going to that bottom end of that spectrum and coming up with a different title for some of these events that happen, again, if they meet that criteria. So in the end, it's the same people being served with a very similar outcome, but the path to get there is just slightly different than what passed last year.
Thank you, Mr. Kerber. You know, I think we have some additional provisions to discuss. So maybe, you know, not having talked to Senator Dahl and none of us having done so, we'd like to maybe just hold on these for a few minutes see if somebody can run find Senator Dahl and he can come and explain to us where he's at. So we do have some other things to talk about so we can move on and kind of just put House Sections 11, 17, and 18 aside for a minute. And House 19, 20, and 21, pick those up.
And there is an amendment to make that language clear. If I could maybe...
Is that A9?
It's page 2 of the A9. So maybe if I could just amend the House language, really about it in the order that the House would like to bring it up. And that would be, I would move page 3, line 3.1 to... 4.3 of.
So we're going to divide the A9 amendment.
Right.
And we're going to take up lines 3.1
to the end.
To the end, to line 4.3 of the A9 amendment.
And that'll clean it up based upon some contact.
And all we're doing is amending the House language so that we can entertain a discussion about the language the House would like to move. So Representative Abler.
I do have an oral amendment too, if I can, on line 3.30. Well, it's just cleaner. The on line 3.30, delete a county and insert another. That's more appropriate for commerce.
Okay, so the number of calls that were referred to another agency for resolution is how that.
And I'll incorporate that, Mr. Chair, in my amendment.
So everyone understand the Abler amendment, the A9 3.1 to the end with the oral amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. We now have the House language cleaned up. And so you can.
Well, yeah, thanks. Mr. Chair, I think the best example of this, with all respect to the department, is the Minnesota Care Helpline. It's been so unsuccessful in giving people help that when people call us for help, we don't send them there. We actually try to find a person at a desk. Originally, we had the Department of Health in this group of people who could, we'd be getting comments. Department of Health doesn't have helplines, they have desks. And so if you follow the problem, you actually find a person who knows the topic, and they try to resolve those things. And this is meant to be a real minimal approach to just see how are the helplines working? Were they indeed helpful? And we get memos all the time from the department on questions in committee. And so it seemed to me it would be a good idea to put some of that same – there's an administrator of every helpline. There's a staff that runs the helpline. And so there could be something as simple as just a tally sheet. How did it go? They might make it a little more fancy, but simply to know how was the helpline working. And the Department of Human Service came to me, and they suggested language that was this. So basically they would give a memo each year to the governor and the various chairs to know how many calls they got, what was the topic, you know, how many and the calls that were referred elsewhere. and how just basically how helpful it was. And then they put it on their website so people could, it's just a little daylight on the helplines in it. And then in Commerce's situation, they don't really refer to the counties for resolution, they just refer to other agencies. And it doesn't mean the resolution's to their satisfaction, at least, I mean, if you didn't pay a bill and you're in trouble because you didn't pay a bill, well, you didn't pay the bill. So that's not you can't get help from what's impossible, but that's the topic, Mr. Chair.
Questions of members? Senator Dell.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Abler, how much time is it going to take to we're asking for more record keeping. How much more time is it going to take away from helping people to keep track of whether they're doing any good or not?
Senator Dill, I would expect minimal. When I'm on the phone, I do all kinds of stuff while I'm on the phone. if it's a boring conversation, I read the newspaper even when I'm on the phone, but just kidding about that. But this is meant to be a very low bar. It's not a formalized report. It's simply a letter you might get saying how each particular helpline worked. I don't know if the department wants to comment how they'd implement it. I don't know if they're, but this is the language they brought to us that said it would work for them.
This was brought to you by Commerce and Human Services?
Human Service brought this, and then we modeled it on Commerce, and they preferred the DHS language than the language it had originally.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Moi.
I'd like to hear from the department.
I was just doing questions from members.
And they're here, and we'll jumping up. If you want to comment about...
Questions with the door opening and shutting.
Well, they want to know how much you like this and how it will make the world a better place.
Well, and how much burden it would be was Senator Dill's question. How much work would this be? How much would it divert from your main goal of actually helping?
Representative Senator, my name is Karen Mickelson with DHS, and our different areas were concerned at first whether it's going to be a lot of work or it was just a memo, and it helped that you took our suggestion and this is just a memo. Some of the issues we don't, like healthcare, so they don't track some of that. So if they could do as best as they can to track what is coming in and what kind of resolution and where the calls are going so that it doesn't detract from answering the calls and trying to resolve as much as they can. That would be good if we just, without adding any additional work, if we could make it happen that way, that would help in some of the other areas.
And that was my intent, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Dill.
Mr. Chairman, to the witness, it seems to me it's going to take work to find out if you did any good or not. If you answer the telephone and they have a question, you answer it, and you say goodbye, how do you know if it did any good or not?
Senator,
Ms. Mickelson.
Chair, I discussed this with Representative Abler, and he said it was kind of subjective, like whether or not it's with merit is kind of up to the person taking the call, that whether they feel that they've helped or, you know, whether it was a legitimate question and they were able to help. And I guess, a lot of the calls aren't necessarily something that the department or the person answering the helpline can answer, but they directed the call needs to go to the county or needs to go to another agency or something. So they kind of also do direct people to the right person that can answer the question. Does that answer your question?
So if Mr. Chairman, Ms. Mickelson, if the question is whatever it is and the answer is we'll talk to your county about it, is that considered a successful call?
I believe that would be yes.
And what if you say a bunch of stuff and the answer is I think you should go to the county but I'm not sure, but why don't you try the county and see if that helps? Is that also a successful call?
Ms. Mickelson.
Senator Lurie, Senator Dill, it's my understanding that the helplines, they're more direct. Yes, here's where you need to go. They have the people that they have at the lines are the people that understand the program and the questions and the types of calls they get in. So they directly, they don't refer them to somewhere unless they know it's the correct person. Otherwise, there are times when they take information and then they'll get back to the person, to the caller, and say, we'll get back to you with the information. They have to do some research on it. Or they ask the constituent or the call to provide more information so they can direct them in the right area.
Representative Tao?
Ms. Mickelson, what's the volume? What are we talking about? 10 calls a day? Or?
Ms. Mickelson?
Representative Senator Lori, I don't have the volume. I don't have that exact information. I know it's hundreds of calls
per day
come in, probably between the various helplines.
Is there, we would need to get on record, is there any cost to implementing this provision to either agency?
Some of our divisions have said there might be a minimal cost if they have to do a computer program to set up a program for tracking. Some of the information that was requested, they don't track it right now, and so they'd have to track things a little bit better. So it would be a little bit more time-consuming.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Moi?
I rather like these type of provisions because I think just this discussion proves that if we're not tracking this, this is kind of how we measure our return on investment of how we're providing services to the public. And the fact that we're not tracking this is kind of appalling to me. So, I mean, I'm really glad that the department is willing to do this. And we should do this. I look forward to reading the report, even though I don't sit on any of the committees. I'm sure Representative Abler and Mr. Chair, you will make that known to the rest of us. I'm really interested in this. So. Thank you.
Thanks.
Mr. Kerber, any thoughts from DHS's perspective?
Mr. Chair, just following up on Senator Dill's question, you know, I think a lot of calls that come into the department, there are many, many calls that come in, and there are a whole range of things. I mean, in the licensing division, we get calls regarding how do I apply for a fishing license all the way down to is it true that my background study will really prevent me from ever working anywhere? And we answer all of those. Now, we don't always give people the answer they want to hear, and so that, you know, resolved gets to be sort of a subjective thing. Did we answer the question and did we provide them with the accurate information? Whether or not it's what they wanted to hear, I think, is what this is trying to get at. Or do they need to go someplace else? And that's what the subsequent provisions were for. Did they need to be referred to a county or did they need to be referred to some other agency? I think that's what we're trying to get at. But I don't think the report is going to show how many people are actually necessarily satisfied with the answer they got, but they got the answer.
Mr. Chair, just one final comment. This is limited to helplines. And so if you call the department, if I call Jerry at work, Mr. Kerber, sorry, and have a question, that's not a helpline. These are the things we pay money for. We have staff, and their job is to demand the helpline. And so it says helpline on their job title. So it's meant to be narrow. If you don't have a helpline, you don't got to do it. So that's
which is why you took the Department of Health out.
Right, because they don't have any help.
They have desks.
They have desks.
What's the difference between a desk, a help desk?
They don't have a help desk.
What desks do they have?
They have people working there.
Oh,
and
just people.
So call Mary Smith, and she'll help you with your X-ray question.
All right.
So they go more to direct. And so they didn't qualify for my little project. Should I move the amendment, Mr. Chair?
We've moved the amendment. So I think what we have left is really House Sections 19 and has become 20 now.
Can we move 19 and 20?
That'd be in order.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I'll move House 19 and 20.
Representative Abler moves House Sections 19 and 20 as amended by the A9 amendment. Any further questions on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. All right. I haven't seen Senator Dahl yet, so we'll keep moving. House Section 23, the repealer on the chiropractic records.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that's a technical thing. I don't know if Ms. Aves wants to tell the story, but it was last year we put a rule into statute, did some editing on it, and it was meant in the language the amendment that was adopted had the repealer of the rule, which was now obsolete. This is just repealing the rule, which is now obsolete. It's been put in statute. The language is been put in statute, so it's
very, very technical. Nobody's been able to describe this to me as of yet.
Ms. Aves can tell you.
Last year, this rule was enacted into law. In the process of amending different bills together, I forgot to put the repealer in to repeal the rule. The rule is now obsolete because it says it in statute, the very same thing. So this is just as a favor to me.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I wasn't hoping to get a mea culpa out of my staff, so I...
Well, I didn't mean to push for that anyway. In this conference committee, when we see the word chiropractor, in the Senate, our eyebrows raise, and we go, what is this?
Yeah. You can expect that it's good legislation. That'd be a good idea, you can be sure.
So Representative Abler moves House Section 23. All those in favor of that signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. All right.
We have the
House 22.
Yeah, that's the real property. We can do that.
That's the real property.
Yeah, so I move that amendment so we can get it in front of us. There's an amendment.
There's an amendment to it? Okay, let's
Chair, I'll move the A8 amendment.
And this is moving an amendment to
amend
house language. So we're not adopting this. We're moving the A8 amendment to get it in shape.
So any questions on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. We have Section 22 cleaned up by the A8 amendment in front of us. So.
Mr. Chair, this topic came from Representative Ward, and the challenge is the Brainerd facility is it's vacant. It costs us $1 million a year, and there's a proposal through. This is the language I believe that all the departments have come to a resolution about to allow the commissioner to let the tribes operate this facility, and I think take over ownership of it through a transaction, which I think the witnesses can comment about. But I think it's a good answer to a very difficult problem. And so I think with that, I'll do it.
No,
so, Mr. Chair, I don't know which witnesses are best suited to, if Mr. Haas is here, he should come up, or if admin wants to come up. I don't know if they're here. But so how much do you want to know about it? Yeah, I know you've been briefed on it.
I've been briefed on it. I don't know how much our...
If the committee has questions.
Mr. Chair, this is a little bit more substantive, and I wondered if there's a Senate bill to this provision.
Was
this something that kind of came up for it? I just want to know what the context is.
Staff, do you know Ms. Aves?
No.
Ms. White.
Ms. White, no Senate bill introduced.
It came up just as it was a work in progress. We put some language on for a placeholder to try to address this. The challenge is that there's $1 million a year, I think, in fiscal impact of the state to keep this open through inefficient heating systems, et cetera. And there's a mechanism that goes away. There's not a fiscal note to this, but it would save money. So does that make sense? Maybe the department can clarify that some more. But there's $1 million a year that's not booked somewhere that we just get out of the sky, which somehow pays for this bill. But this would be a way to let the White Earth Tribe do some social services, which is, I think, a very big need.
I guess if there is some savings to DHS at the other end of the hall, we're running a bill right now that would be pretty interested in booking a little bit of those if that was...
And I don't know why they're not booking savings. But
possible, but yeah. We can... delve into that a little bit, I guess.
Maybe we should take some testimony. Maybe Mr. Haas could comment on the need. And
give us a little bit more background on this and particularly what's happened in the Senate regarding this. I will say on the record that the representative from this area in the Senate is vehemently opposed to this provision. That's Senator Coring, and he is in opposition to this. We do have members of the Senate who have talked to me and believe that this is of great value to the state and would move things forward, but that's the discussion that's happened in the Senate, but we don't have a bill as far as I know. So I'm
Mr.
Haas.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Bill Haas. I represent the White Earth Tribal Nation. There was a bill turned in both in the House and the Senate. It was turned in late. This project came about after session started, and we were not able to make deadlines to get a bill in. What happened is after session started, DHS approached White Earth Tribal Nation and asked if they would be interested in taking over the Brainerd Treatment Facility to continue chemical and mental health treatment and maybe other services, which we will be identifying through a feasibility study that will be starting shortly. So we had a little piece in a licensing to allow that was passed, and it's hopefully this week the conference committee reports will be accepted by both the House and the Senate. It passed with unanimous support, which will actually provide the mechanism for providing the treatment at this facility. But in order to access the funds through the federal government, the tribe has to own the facility. Otherwise, it's billed through the state and the county. If White Earth owns the facility and the land, then they can bill it through the Indian Health Services 638 funding, which is going to save, as you said, Senator, DHS will see a savings there. Plus, they're spending $1.3 million a year to heat vacant buildings in this facility. So what we want to do is White Earth is looking at taking over the project on about a five-year time frame, and we're going to phase into it program one program at a time so we can get proficient with it, similar to what we did in Bemidji 2 years ago when we purchased the Gilfillan Center. White Earth is now operating what is called Ashkamanadu, which is New Spirit, successfully for Indian children who are have problems with chemical dependency and mental health issues. And so that is really the premises why we were approached to operate the Brainerd facility, because we can treat people, we can switch the funding mechanism and help a lot of people in the state. This will also be open to non-Native people. So it's not strictly a Native operation, but we can take Native Americans who are having problems throughout the state to this facility and treat them, and thus relieve the counties and the state of that obligation in other parts of the state. So it's a win-win situation for all of us. It's just that we had to come up with a mechanism, and the amendment you have before us, we sat down with the AG's office, admin, DHS 2 weeks ago, and we worked out the details, and Senator Cornyn was concerned because it was an unconstitutional amendment. So we sat down with the parties involved, and actually DHS, or not DHS, but admin and the AG's office are the ones who drafted this amendment, and they are satisfied with it.
Maybe just want to comment about the job impact. This is supposed to have a significant local impact on creating jobs.
Yes. In Bemidji, actually, we brought 100 jobs back. We lost when we reopened up the Ashkamanadu. With Brainerd, we're looking at saving the jobs that are already up there and potentially creating up to 300 new jobs in an area that's going to need new jobs because their unemployment rate is very high. We are actually meeting with Crow Wing County and the City of Brainerd on Wednesday up at the facility with the Tribal Council to start bridging the relationships and how we can partner together to make this facility work and what services they want to see offered at the facility.
Senator Dell.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Mr. Haas, did Senator Coring receive all the information that you just provided us? You mentioned his name in your testimony, but is he the chairman just announced that he's opposed to this. Is he aware of all the information you just presented?
Mr. Chair and Senator Dill, he is aware of the facility and how it's going to work. I briefed him a while ago on it. He has not seen this amendment, I believe, at this point.
You know, as I'm reading the amendment, one of the biggest things that he took issue with in discussions with me, and this is the first I've really gone over the amendment either, is it appears that we're proposing to sell it for fair market value.
Yes.
Now.
Yes.
Whereas in the bill, right, when we came in, it was for something under appraised value and under fair market value. I mean, it could be that this removes his opposition. I don't know, and maybe we should go look for another senator.
Or we could just pass it.
Well, that would be one option, and it, you know, you could make that motion and see how it goes for you.
What does the chair recommend?
Mr. Chair?
Senator
Moi. I don't know a lot about this center. Is this center currently, is it sitting emptied, or is it functional right now, Mr. Haas?
Mr. Chair, Senator Moore. Actually, in the bonding bill this year, there was proposed to be $5.8 million to demolish this whole campus. And 4 years ago, they did a very in-depth feasibility study to see what they could do with this facility. But financially, the city of Brainerd and Crow Wing County could not afford to do that. So that is why it lost my train of thought. Excuse me.
Mr. Haas, my question was, is the building currently empty?
Okay. Mr. Chair, Senator Ma, there's only three buildings on the facility out of 12 that are being used. The rest are mothballed, but they have to be heated in order to prevent deterioration of the buildings.
And Mr. Haas, if has there been any conversation around what the speculated or estimated fair market value would be for this property?
Mr. Chair, Senator Moy, we do not know. Right now, there's actually thought by DHS and admin that there might be a negative market value to it because of there's no purpose for it in the market in the economy. Currently. So we will not know until our feasibility study is done and we do appraisals of the property, and then that will set the value of it. So what we would like to do is start the process so that when the feasibility study is done and the appraisals are done, we don't have to wait for another legislative session, because there's an existing program right now called Four Winds that is the programming is declining in there for Native Americans, and we want to turn that around and start getting that program up and running again and expand it. So that this would then be allow us to do step one and take over three buildings is what we'd be looking at to start with.
Well, Mr. Haas, my only concern is that I don't want to put this in language and then putting the tribe in a position where the fair market value is, say, $5.3 million. Mm-hmm. From a financial standpoint, is that part of their has that been contemplated, I guess, in the financials of this project? Mm-hmm. Or are we going to have to try back here next session asking for a bonding bill dollars to upgrade the facility that they've taken an obligation for from the state? It's kind of like from the state to the state. So
yeah. And Mr. Chair, Senator Moy, that was the issue with the other one. We cannot use state bonding dollars for tribal funding. So that would not be something we'd come back for next year. We could not do that.
So
because it's in the Constitution, and that was the issue that was raised with the previous amendment, was the tribes are not recognized as a government entity in the state of Minnesota in our Constitution.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Haas, are we going to be putting the tribes in a disadvantaged position if they, if we're making them pay fair market value for it, and if it comes out that it's cost a lot of money? I mean, are we locking them in statutorily?
Mr. Chair and Senator Moy, no, we're not. We need to see if feasibly that this can work for White Earth and DHS and all that. So that is why we need to go through the feasibility study. We need to do the performas on the financials. We did that all with the Ashkamanadu project. And once we saw the numbers, then we knew we could make it work. But then we proceeded. So we're just trying to get our ducks in order so we can, if everything lines up, we can do this. We can move right into it and execute the transaction and start the process. And then there was concerns when they were meeting with admin and the AG's office about easements to the property, the roads, utilities, and things like that. and White Earth, and we put it in the language here that the state would be able to cross properties and things like that. They would have easements, road easements. We would provide access, you know, to the whole facility. So, you know, White Earth has been good partners with the city of Bemidji, and we plan on being good partners with the county and the city of Brainerd and the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Tao.
Clearly in the amendment, it's a may.
Yeah.
So
it's permissive language.
Yeah, you know, and so if the numbers doesn't work,
yep.
You know, no one has to act on it.
So I think A, B, and C, the commissioner may, and may. Yep.
Good idea.
And all or part. You might just want one building to start with.
Right. Mr. Kerber, did you have some?
Mr. Chair and members, I was just going to add in response to Senator-in-law's question about the current use, there are also Minnesota Care
yes.
offices operating on campus. So the Department of Human Services in St. Paul has been branching out and using some of that space. And my understanding is that paragraph B in the amendment will allow that's
so
that
sad.
Continue.
Oh,
that
okay. Yes. That's what you're getting at in paragraph B is that yeah. your Minnesota Care helplines or whatever.
That's my understanding. Then that's where they'll be answered. Paragraph C is we'll deal with utilities and easements.
What about the $1.3 million in savings for not heating those buildings anymore?
There's in. In the DHS, in the state operated services budget, there is $1.3 billion that goes to keeping the buildings mothballed, I guess they call it, heated or cooled to a certain level. There is bonding still that has to be paid off on that, and that's about $900,000. So the commissioner of DHS would like to, has told state operated services they have a year to figure out how to pay off the bonds because they've already got those funds. And then the bond would be paid off at that same time that the feasibility study is being done that frees up the property.
So it'd be some forecast savings. But.
So it'd be some savings in
possibly,
the next biennium.
Possibly.
Possibly some tail savings.
I don't know.
Would have to be. Million a year. But.
I mean, we're looking for some tail savings too. I know. so I'll, you know.
7.99 billion to go. So.
I say we should pass it, Mr. Chair.
Well,
can we spend the money here, Mr. Chair?
Well, we'll take recommendation for you.
Are you comfortable proceeding?
Well, I'd like to. Talk about how we could maybe get this tracked in a budget,
oh.
you know, and have some further, you know, I'd like to see a fiscal note.
Actually, I think there wouldn't be a fiscal note until they decided to do it. This is permissive. And so once they sign the paper, then the $1 million will land into the tails. But until they do a deal on enough property to make it incrementally make sense, I don't think there'd be a fiscal savings because it's just May and part.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Haas.
That's why there's not a fiscal.
With the schedule that we're looking at as a 5-year takeover and transfer of property, the state will have to continue to mothball the remaining buildings until White Earth would take them over. So there would be some small savings every year for the next 5 years. We don't know how much savings there would be in the ongoing programming because that will be determined with the feasibility study, and we will share that. Those numbers with the chairs of the various committees that would be involved so that they, you know, as you say, as we move forward, we can maybe look at what savings would be there. But to speculate at this point, we really don't know to the extent. And we also have to look at our caseload mix. That's going to be the other thing, whether it's native or non-native, because the native we can bill through the 638 IHS funds, where the non-native individuals that would go through our programming would be then still the county and the state consolidated fund.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House 22.
Representative Abler moves House Section 22. On that motion, real quick, before we do that, so how would you characterize the DHS's position on this, Mr. Kerber? Would you be in support of this?
Mr. Chair, that's my understanding is that DHS is in support of this.
And the administration
right now.
And the administration is supportive of this. The Department of Administration, the Department of Human Services is in favor. Okay.
Karen Mickelson, yes, they are.
With that understanding, any further questions, comments? Seeing none, all those in favor of Representative Abler's motion to adopt House Section 22, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you. All we are left with in Article 1 is House 11, 17, and 18.
Mr. Chair, I think this.
You have another amendment.
I think that Mr. Kerber might want to come back up. And they would, and also, I have a question about A6. Is that anyway? The A6 amendment is this thing about the court case. I think you were briefed on this.
Yeah, and Kerber. That just got stuck in the. In the omnibus bill, too, I noticed, I think.
Right, and just, Mr. Chair, I'm not convinced that this is actually a good place to put
fine.
That. Yeah, at least this way it'll get out of here alive. So,
sorry to interrupt. Senator Coring is not on Capitol grounds at the moment, and just thought I should.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for the interruption. We did. Yeah, we just finished that discussion.
Okay.
Thank you.
Took care of it.
That's a very soft way to say it. Mr. Mayor, should move the A6 amendment to get it in front of us.
Okay. Representative Abler moves the A6 amendment on that motion. Representative Abler.
And I could talk for an hour about this, but I think I won't burn up the committee's time and let Mr. Kerber describe it.
Mr. Chair and members, this is a provision that did pass on the House floor, and it's also, you'll notice, is going to be in Senator Berglund's big bill, and it's also in the House budget bill, too, Health and Human Services. What this is doing is bringing our background study system into compliance with a Court of Appeals decision that was issued in February. Under that decision, the Court of Appeals determined that our system of due process related to the hearings that we offer was unconstitutional in some narrow settings, and it's relating to those cases where we disqualify somebody not because they committed a crime, but because we've determined at the Department of Human Services that they committed an act that meets the definition of a crime, and we made that determination based on our finding that there was a preponderance of evidence. Under the law as it has existed since 2001, the people were entitled to challenge that finding, certainly, and they were entitled to a hearing, but they didn't get that hearing right if we granted them a set-aside of that disqualification. So if we were to have said that somebody was disqualified for having committed, that we decided that they committed an assault crime, and they said, no, I really didn't commit it, and we said, we think you did, but today you don't pose a risk of harm, so we're going to let you work in this child care center, for instance. Because we set aside that disqualification, they didn't have a hearing right on that underlying disqualification itself. And that's what the Court of Appeals found to be unconstitutional. And so as of February 23rd, we've started offering those hearings, and these provisions in this amendment simply bring the statutes into conformance with that.
And give individuals an additional hearing opportunity in very limited circumstances in compliance with what you've already implemented to be in accord with the court case.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay. Did you want to spend your hour?
No, I do have another witness.
We have another witness? Okay.
I think what you will talk about is we discovered that there is one little oral amendment that would be very helpful to this amendment, and it is, there's an extra two words on page 1, line 16, the two words, the individual, are extra and confusing, and it would be better if those were gone, because the sentence now starts with an individual. Before.
That's a very long sentence.
That's really long. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that amendment to strike on line 116, the individual.
That'll be an oral amendment incorporated into the A6 amendment.
That.
Did you have further testimony to offer in regards to?
Mr. Chair, member of the committee, my name is Melinda Hugdahl from the Legal Services Advocacy Project, and we've been working with Mr. Kerber and the department on this language over the last couple of weeks. And this now will be language we've agreed upon that will go into this bill, and I assume the other bills will be tailored accordingly, or language moves so that they all catch up with each other. But just to be clear, too, this doesn't change anyone's existing hearing rights they had before. It's really a consistency with the Court of Appeals. So just so that everyone's clear,
there's
it's
more
not,
hearing.
It's not taking any hearing rights away. It's just adding one.
It's adding one additional hearing right in a narrow set of circumstances that the Court of Appeals told DHS they were required to. Okay. So Representative Abler moves the A6 amendment with the oral amendment on line 1.16. Everyone understand that motion? Mr. Kerber.
Mr. Chair, if I might, one more little oral amendment would be very helpful is the effective date. There is no effective date, and because it's essentially already in effect, it would be very helpful if it was effective the day following enactment.
Okay, I'll move that, and I can incorporate that.
That'll be another oral incorporation. Representative Abler moves the A6 amendment with the oral amendment on line 116 and the effective date signature on that motion. Any further questions or comments? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. And real quick on this, so this is the latest, greatest. Is this the same as we just adopted in Health and Human Services, or are there differences? It's not. It's more current than what was adopted.
Mr. Chair, this is more current than what.
Okay. Okay.
There's one more open matter besides the Greiling thing. It's this the language on the A9 amendment. And Mr. Kerber, I think this came from them. Section.
The one that we did
parts
of.
Yeah, right. Lines 1-7 and following. Maybe Mr. Kerber can tell you why it's a good idea.
Mr. Chair and members, this is an amendment to Minnesota Statutes Chapter Sections 518.165 that begins at Section 17 on 1.7 of the A9. And what this is doing is it's responding to the Minnesota Supreme Court is responsible for the background studies that are done on guardians ad litem that are appointed by the courts for kids in the juvenile justice system. And under the statute governing that, it requires the Department of Human Services to do those background studies for them. What they have been wanting to do here in response to a kind of a federal trend is to have more complete and accurate background studies by requiring an FBI, a fingerprint-based FBI record check in those cases. And so we've had some discussions about them, about whether or not we have really had the authority to do those background studies as they want up until this point. And so just to make sure, I offered to try and get this amendment, this clarifying amendment to our background study law, so that in every background study that we're doing for the Supreme Court on guardians ad litem, as they're requesting, we can do an FBI record check. That's what this amendment does.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Moi.
Ms. Kerber, is there a fee that people pay when they go from the, or a fee difference when they go from getting the BCA versus the FBI?
Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair and Senator Moi, yes, the difference in price is $50. Under Chapter 245C, a standard background check is $20, and if there's a need to go to the FBI, it's an additional $50. We have an interagency agreement with the Supreme Court, and they pay us the fee. So whether or not they pass that on to individuals that they're appointing as guardians, I'm not sure.
So, Mr. Chair,
Senator Moi.
Ms. Kerber, do you know at current time who pays for that? Does the court pay out of that, out of the court's own budget, or do the applicants pay for that?
Mr. Chair and Senator Moi, I'm sorry, I don't know where they get the money.
But, Mr. Kerber, you said that the courts may pass it on. If it comes out of the court's budget, they may very well, at their own discretion, pass it on to the individual.
That would be my understanding. I'm not aware of any prohibition in this section of the law that would prohibit them from passing it on to the individuals.
So this could essentially increase the fees associated with becoming a guardian ad litem from $20 to $70.
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Are the guardians ad litem represented by anybody? Have they weighed in on this provision?
No, Mr. Chair, they haven't. This amendment really hasn't been publicly viewable.
Okay.
This is the first time it's before anybody. So,
Mr. Kerber, tell us again where this originated. You said there was an agreement that you made with somebody to try to get this done.
Mr. Chair, that would be with the Supreme Court. We have an interagency agreement with the Minnesota Supreme Court, who oversees the district court appointing of guardians ad litem for kids. And they have wanted to change their procedures. There are some other changes in place where I recalled something. Okay. It used to be that the courts would appoint people out there, citizens, to be guardians. A recent different change requires that all of those people who are appointed as guardian are now employees of the Minnesota Supreme Court. And as employees of the Minnesota Supreme Court, things are going to be handled very differently. They are going to have they're going to have many fewer of these guardians, because a single employee will be able to be guardian for multiple children, whereas that may not have been the case before. And so these are going to be background studies done on employees of the Supreme Court who are being employed for the purposes of being guardians of children. And so I'm not sure if they would be passing that on to their employees or prospective employees, or if it's, again, coming out of their budget. I should have asked that. I'm sorry. I don't know.
Senator Moi.
Well, Mr. Chair, we have a bill that's going through the legislature right now where the court is spinning off the guardian ad litem program that's currently under the court's jurisdiction to become an independent agency. So I don't know. At the current time, it may be a combination of judiciary employees as well as volunteer guardians ad litem. But I think once the program is created, whether they're employees of the guardian ad litem board or volunteers, they will still be state employees, because they will be with this state-funded independent board, like the Board of Public Defense. I guess public defenders are state employees, but they won't be court employees if the guardian ad litem program if the bill becomes law and the guardian ad litem board gets established. So I think it's important for us to, since this has not been vetted, if this was a separate bill, we would have brought this to judiciary so that we could talk about how it fits in with the spinoff of the guardian ad litem board, and we would try to get, I have my staff calling the court to see where the cost implications would be. Just so that if it's not an issue, we should put that on the table.
Senator Moi, you're the author of that bill with the guardian ad litem. Where is that at?
It passed the Senate floor,
and
I think it's on the House floor.
Do you know, Mr. Kerber, if this has been worked out in conjunction with the possible or likely passage of the restructuring of the guardian ad litem program?
Mr. Chair, I regret that I haven't been following that, and I wasn't made aware of that possible evolution of things by the staff contact I have at the Supreme Court. So I don't know.
So it might be premature for us to adopt this amendment and incorporate it into our bill at this point with these open questions. We still have House Sections 11, 17, and 18, the child caring. I just got word that Senator Dahl will not be at the Capitol, and I think we're getting pretty close. I'd hate to leave this bill open just for that. I mean, I don't know. Anybody have any more questions on House 11, 17, and 18? I know I've worked with Senator Dahl on some of these provisions, and not these three in particular, but he's been very supportive of trying to find some way to move some of these initiatives. Senator Dell.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I don't claim to be any kind of a special expert on this, but based on the description that I heard about this change on how they're going to treat maltreatment or non-maltreatment of minors, it seems to me it's a step in the right direction.
I was gaining a good comfort level with it myself. I mean, this is the one where if we adopt it, it will need a different effective date. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
We did that.
No, we said we'd incorporate, we'd move the second
with the
effective date.
I think it's been worked out pretty well. I think it does move the ball.
Representative Abler moves House Sections 11, 17, and 18 with the change in effective date from January 1st, 2010 to January 1st, 2011. Any on that motion, any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, motion prevails.
We're done except for Article 2, which...
I'm done.
Article 2 is moving separately.
That's a nice way to say it.
In both bodies.
Yes. Moving separately.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Moi.
Mr. Chair, the DHS hearing provision, I understand, was added as an amendment to Senate File 2790. And Article 2 of this bill is identical language that is moving both in Senate File 2790 as well as the companion to Senate File 2790. I was glad that the DHS hearing language that was amended on the Senate floor, on the House floor, I believe, to Senate File 2790, was adopted to go in this bill, so that we didn't have to consider in that bill. And since we're taking the DHS provisions out of 2790, you know, including that amendment, I mean, what made that amendment germane in 2790 was this DHS background check language that's in Senate File 2790. So, Mr. Chair, I wondered if the conference committee would be willing to entertain separating the Article 2 of the House language to take up only the DHS provision and leaving out the expungement provisions, which I believe is more appropriate in the crime bill.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
I argued for that provision for a while, and I think it puts the bill at risk, is what my latest information. I wholeheartedly agree with it. The debate on the floor is just downright nasty on that.
Well, I guess...
And so I'm sorry about that.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Abel, I guess I'm interested in hearing if we're not going to consider that, since we've already taken other provisions where the Senate doesn't have a position that was in the other bill and put it into this bill. I'd like to hear, at least put it on the record, what the opposition is and what that threat is and where it's coming from.
Well, since I brought it up, you and I and others, the three conferees on this side, have been working since 2005 to find ways to help some people who are duly qualified and fully safe to continue, either restart reworking or work again or continue their employment in some of these DHS facilities. 14,000 were deemed to be secure in the past as they did set-asides, and only one out of those 14,000 actually had any significant offense of a related thing. There were four other unrelated reoffenses, as I understand. And it's the opinion of this member that those people should be allowed the chance to work, and in some cases people have gotten promotions, and then they quit their job, get the promotion, and they couldn't pass the background check and couldn't get rehired by the place that just let them go, that they quit at, having done so well to get a promotion. I cannot speak for the man who lives at the end of the hallway, who works there, and why he's not comfortable with this. I have lobbied long and hard with them to see, help and see the merit of this, and I remain frustrated at that. I think there's more fear than substance in the objections of those who bring those concerns forward, and I guess it's more work for the future to try to help help these people who are duly qualified to continue to work. I thought we had found some level of consensus, and we have not.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Moore.
Representative Abler, have you received written confirmation from the governor's office that they have concerns about this provision, or that somehow it's going to put their agency bill in jeopardy?
Representative Abler.
Maybe Mr. Kerber could speak to that. I think that he is in more direct contact than I. And plus, he's here and knew the job was dangerous when he took it. So.
Mr. Chair, Senator Moy, I think it's been made very clear to us that this provision is not acceptable this year. Similar provisions have been unacceptable in previous years. There have been some minor changes that have been made over the last few years since 2005 to make slight modifications of the permanent bar disqualification. Last year, the department had a bill that related to foster children, so that people who went from being a foster child to an adopted household member, and even if they had a permanent bar disqualification, those people were allowed to request a set aside. So there's been some movement on this issue over time, but this year we've been told pretty clearly, very clearly, that this is not the year for this provision.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Tao.
This is an issue I've been working on for a while as well with Representative Abler, and I actually had a meeting with the governor's representative, or folks from the governor's office in my office, to talk about similar issues, and they're pretty firm. They're not willing to move at all. So I'm the only way I think we could eventually pass some of this stuff is maybe we get a new government.
What, Mr. Chair?
Senator Moy.
What if you don't have two Senate votes to pass the conference committee report, Mr. Chair?
The whole bill dies.
If we don't have the votes to pass a conference committee report, my understanding is we don't have one.
I just wondered how much the executive branch is willing to throw the rest of the bill under the bus for this provision, which really, in substance, gives people a second chance to do the things that we want them to do.
This is very difficult, because I think all five of us conferees believe very strongly in the public policy behind these provisions in Article 2, and it really does place us all in a very difficult position, because we all would like to see the state move significantly in this positive direction, what we view as a positive direction.
Mr. Chair, do you think the governor's office might reconsider if they realize that there might not be two Senate votes to pass this conference committee report?
I would not have a great deal of insight into that. Mr. Kerber, do you have insight into?
Mr. Chair and Senator Moy, it was 2 years ago, I think, that the governor vetoed the department's child welfare bill because of similar provisions.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
I think this probably isn't a marquee bill for this. Although I think it, for us, this may be the bill.
Important, yeah.
Well, we've got some good work on this bill, and I have 12 years I've had the privilege to sit in one of these chairs. And it's the world of the doable and the, and what can you get done and what do you hope to work on again. In this bill, we actually have moved the process forward on two elements. One is this, the second hearing opportunity for the people based on the Supreme Court decision, and the second is the different treatment of the error or the mistake for child care, at least. And so that would be a loss to those of us who care about the topic, not to mention the other elements in the bill, the Brainerd proposal, which may get up to 300 jobs. I practice trying to achieve the doable, Mr. Chair, as a discipline. So I share the sentiment of Senator Moore.
Further comments?
Just want to put it on the record, Mr. Chair.
So we're, everything else is done, right?
Yeah.
Nothing we haven't addressed.
Any other motions? Any other?
I just have one question. So the guardian ad litem thing, which isn't really my project, that's something that could be taken up in your guardian ad litem bill? Is that where it's better done? Is it just not ready to go? Is that...
I'm not sure. I mean, Mr. Chair and Representative Abel, I'm just surprised that this. I'm sure that you know, bills kind of move around in different areas around here. And I mean, if I don't know why we can't take it up in that bill, unless you know the language of the House and Senate are exactly the same, and I mean, and then they accept, you know, the.
Yeah.
So we
the House that hasn't left the House yet, right? So that could be taken up as an amendment to that bill and get a position, and then it could be duly discussed on it. I think that's a good idea. So let's go that way with that. Great. Well, thank you for
a
good
discussion,
Mr. Chair.
We took so many House ones. I got an A4 that
you do.
Juan might offer.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer the A4.
Have you seen the A4?
What is the A4?
You've seen the A4. This is actually an individual. Well, I mean, it's a thing that'll address a instance that occurred in Senator Saxhog's area. Representative Anzels has talked to me about it. The Senate does have a position. We have this exact provision on our continuing care bill, but it does have licensing is really the broader context that this allows, and it really allows for a related individual to be able to operate a facility, and it's supported by the industry and by the Department of Human Services, and there's no cost, and it really helps to address a longstanding issue. We tried to address it last year or 2 years ago, and the attempt that we made had some logistical problems and wasn't able to quite be implemented, and so we've taken many stabs at this. And like I say, the Senate does have a position on it already. It is in our continuing care bill that is awaiting action in the House, but having another home for it would just be good, because we've taken so many stabs at getting this done that we'd just like to make sure that it actually happens this year. Yeah. So Senator Moa moves the A4 amendment.
Can we just have a comment from the department? I don't know if I know this topic real well.
Absolutely.
But I'm... Who would comment about this?
It would be Mr. Kerber.
Okay.
Mr. Chair and Representative Abler, what this does is it puts a small exception in the policy of the state that we don't license family members to care for family members. We make some exceptions for children, foster care in child foster care settings. But what this does is it allows, in a very, very narrow slice of things, it allows a parent, in this case, to provide licensed services to her child, adult child. And so this will allow that person to be an adult foster care license holder and for another setting, another building separate from where she lives. And it will also allow her to hold a waiver license, a DD waiver license, to serve her child. What she's doing now is she's an employee of another agency that receives the funding, pays her as an employee to provide these services for her adult child. And from her perspective, she's witnessing some inefficiencies in that arrangement and thinks that the money that's being spent could actually be
more directly providing services to her child if she were able to just be the license holder in the first place. And so all licensing standards will be complied with. It's just a matter of who is the license holder.
Yeah.
The attempt in the past was to come up with some other kind of a certification program where the county would certify that this person would have met all of the licensing standards, but then that was variable by counties. If a county didn't want to do it, they didn't have to do it. And then CMS said, you know, you have to be more consistent statewide with these expectations for who's receiving this funding. And so it seemed to make the most sense just to allow a small carve out here and put in our licensing statute. So we'll go ahead and we'll issue licenses and things will move forward.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Kerber, is that this is less than 10 people then?
Mr. Chair and Representative Abler, I think it's considerably less than 10 people. At this point, I think we're aware of one. Certainly, these things bring other people forward, and you know, we'll see in a year from now whether it's a really popular provision. You'll note that on line 10 and 11, the person has to have been receiving services in a residential site as of July 1st, 2005. So it isn't opening the door for absolutely everybody. There's a narrow group of people that it'll affect.
Yeah.
Representative Tao.
Mr. Chair, I was surprised by the amendment. I've seen it. I was expecting a napkin with some words on it.
We've evolved in the Senate.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, just one more question. The repealer is, what's it repealing?
The repealer is repealing the other attempt. It's repealing the language that I mentioned that had a certification provision done by counties. And that can go away with this repealer. That's gone, and this replaces it.
Mr. Chair, I think the bill has only one lack, and I think there's just not enough good Senate ideas in it. So I would move this amendment to make the bill properly balanced so it can be a...
Representative Abler moves the A4 amendment. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. With that, I believe we have the conference committee wrapped up. We will council will put together a conference committee report with all of those adopted provisions. Thank you all for your participation and hard work.
Thank you, Chair.
With that, the conference committee on Senate file 2935 stands adjourned. Thank you.